There was definitely something that happened to these people that was earth-shattering and completely has shaken up their lives.
If you want access to the best real ghost stories,
I think she was afraid that they were going to make her little friend go away.
Real accounts of the dead coming back to life.
She had a spirit that she had gotten very close with.
Real video and images of ghosts.
A little boy.
Then you need to be an extra podcast person, also known as an EPP. Sign up to be one for only $5 a month at ghostpodcast.com.
I stared transfixed as the mist began to gradually become more solid and translucent, and to my shock, more human in appearance.
Your support is what keeps our show on the air. For only $5, you'll have access to hundreds of EPP exclusive episodes, updated weekly, exclusive video content, and more.
Behind me in my kitchen, I hear a little girl say, "Are you my daddy? Where's my daddy?"
Keep us on the air and get access to the best ghost stories and more now at ghostpodcast.com. And thanks for your support.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Yes, indeed it is. Our phone number 855-853-4802. And on today's episode, a couple is troubled by the noises from their crawl space. I'm assuming it's more than squirrels. A ghost finds a unique way to pick up on its visitors. A listener wishes she had memory of her ghost hunting experiences. And a snake-like creature disturbs one listener in the middle of the night. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
I'm surprised we don't have more snakes in our show.
In our show?
I mean, just in general. I mean, when you think about spooky stuff, or even just like your atypical Halloween-y type things, you know, there's always like snakes and pictures, and it's always creepy this. But it's rare that a snake. Bunk beds make a 10-to-1 appearance on our show over a snake.
Oh, I think it's more than 10-to-1.
You're probably right.
I can't think of any other snake stories.
I can't either.
Out of hundreds and hundreds of stories, I can't think of any other snake stories.
No.
And I'm sorry if somebody sent one in and I'm just brain farting that, but I can't right now on the spot think of any.
There was a great snake incident of 2015 that... just making it up. Although we did have a snake incident. Did we talk about that on the show?
The snakes in the box?
Yeah.
A snake in a box?
Did we talk about the snake in a box?
Yeah, we did.
Okay,
we talked about snakes in a box.
So I guess the only time snakes make an appearance are when Jenny finds one of the children's toys. It's dried up and a mini snake.
And I think we told the story of you prancing through the yard when I told you there was a snake.
Yeah, we talked. So snakes have made a lot of appearances from us, from our stories.
Right.
That's kind of disturbing. I hate snakes. I just get the shivers even thinking about snakes. Don't like them. Do not like them. And if you're a snake lover, well, that's great. To each their own. But I'm not advocating violence towards snakes. They're not my thing.
No.
They just creep me out. So there you go. Okay. So a good snake story today on the show. I'm excited about that. I wanted to share this, and I talked about it on the Daily Brew, which is the thing I'm doing on Facebook every day, or trying to do every day, where I just kind of talk for like 10 minutes about nothing other than weird shit. I interact with everybody. We ask questions, go back and forth, and then we hold hands and sing a little song. Usually a show tune of some sort. Today, it was humming the theme from Twin Peaks. It was special. I was talking about the show that we found last night, and I thought we'd talk about it here because there's a lot more people that listen to this than that thing. We're always looking for kind of a creepy, weird show to watch.
Yeah.
And we don't always have one. Every once in a while, we kind of come across one. And it's usually the ones we come across have been in existence for a long time, and we just have missed it. But I was, thumbing through Netflix, and then this one came up, and I had never heard of it before. It was on A&E about 2 years ago, and it got canceled, but 10 episodes were made, and it's great.
Yeah.
This is not a promotion or advertising for the show because obviously they don't give a shit about the show anymore. They canceled it. I just wanted to share with you guys because he probably would like it.
Well, and if we share what kind of shows we like, then we can get other recommendations from listeners of shows that
and
they like.
We got a bunch today that were sent in on Facebook. But this one is called The Returned, and it's based on like a French series, but the Americanized version of it. It's just creepy as hell. It's set like in the Pacific Northwest, and it's this kind of quaint, you know, little town that if you've ever been to an area like that can kind of relate to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Pacific Northwest kind of reminds me of Wisconsin. It kind of reminds me of here. It kind of reminds me of all different parts of the country. Just kind of a woodsy community.
Yeah.
Is I guess, the best way to describe it. And suddenly people who have died over the last however how many years suddenly start showing back up in the town. Mm-hmm. As if they were just the accident that killed them just happened. And they're unaware that time has passed and people have aged. And it's bizarre. And I'm really interested to see where it goes. And I'm also kind of not looking forward to the end of the 10 episodes because there was never a finale from what I understand. And it just ends.
Okay. Okay.
So I may have to read subtitles and watch the second season in French to get a better grasp on it. Because I guess it's pretty similar in terms of characters and setting and all that. But I just thought you guys would like to know. It's a good, creepy, weird show you might get a little kick out of.
I think of it, it's to me, it makes me think of like if Wayward Pines and Stranger Things had a baby.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. It's very much along those lines. But good show. Sorry that it never did anything. That's when I doubt it will happen, but I can only hope that maybe one of the online streaming sources, it'll start getting a following on there. Because I don't know how long it's been up on Netflix. It may have just recently popped up. That maybe it'll start getting a following and be revived years later. That people going, hey, that's a great show. Why did this go away?
Hopefully.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's very good. So The Returned, right?
Is yes.
Okay. So there you go. On with your stories today. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Of course, you can write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Tyler writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. My wife and I have been listening and enjoying your show for a year and a half now, but this is the first time I've written in to share a story. Though I've been interested in unexplained events for a long time, this story is probably the closest I've come to a paranormal experience, at least to my knowledge. The story involves what may have been a haunted house that my wife and I were renting 3 years ago in a small town in western Pennsylvania. We only lived in the house for 6 months. It was a 100-year-old, three-story house that we were renting from my wife's boss. To begin with, the house has some creepy features. The unfinished basement had old concrete floors and stone walls and had what felt like a labyrinth of different rooms. Small room kept leading to another and so on. Every time I went down there, I always found a new dead bird lying on the concrete. Needless to say, we only went down to the basement when we had to. The third floor was a large lofted space, and two places in the loft there were what looked like small doors that went waist high. Each door led to a large crawl space that circled the entire third floor loft. Because my wife and I never planned to go into the crawl space, and we didn't want to be freaked out by the sound of the small doors opening because of the wind or some other occurrence, we blocked one door with a bookshelf and the other with a large paperweight. I joked with my wife that I didn't want some creepy British child wandering out of the crawl space and asking us to help solve his murder. The unexplained events started when my wife and I, after 4 months of living in the house, switched bedrooms to avoid hearing the street noise early in the morning outside the window of the master bedroom. In the new room that we moved our bed into, my wife and I each began noticing a strange noise that would begin long after we'd gone to sleep, often between 1 and 3 in the morning. The noise sounded like it was coming from the wall behind our bed. It's difficult to describe the noise. It sounded like a combination of someone bending the insides of the wall behind us and someone sporadically bouncing a ball on the first floor above us. At first, the noise would only wake us up, and then we'd go back to sleep. However, these strange sounds coming from the wall and then also the ceiling began to keep us up at night. Determined to figure out what the noise was, I searched the outside of the house in hopes of finding overhanging branches or loose telephone wires that might be close to the room and somehow account for the noise. However, after looking for long periods of time, I never found anything outside that could possibly have produced the noises that were keeping us up. Nevertheless, my wife and I found ways to sleep despite the noise, and I wouldn't have thought much more of it or connected the noise to anything paranormal if it wasn't for what we discovered in the loft crawl space on the day we moved out of the house. After packing up all our belongings and loading up the U-Haul to move, we'd found jobs in a different town. One of the last items I remember to grab was a paperweight that had been blocking one of the half-size crawlspace doors. I grabbed the paperweight and then, on a whim, decided to open the door to peek in at the eerie crawlspace. What I saw gave me an unsettling feeling that still leaves me with questions to this day. Across from the door in the corner of the crawlspace was an old sleeping pallet and window. Since we needed to get it down the road and I was too creeped out by what else I might find in the crawlspace, I didn't go investigate. However, I did call up my wife to show her what I discovered. She pointed out that where the sleeping pallet and window were located would have been right above the bedroom, in which we consistently heard strange noises at roughly the same times each night. As I look back on it, I don't know what to think. The house wasn't large enough for a squatter to have gone unnoticed. Furthermore, for most of our time at the house, I worked from home, primarily in the third floor lofted space. Sure, I would have noticed if someone had been coming and going from the crawl space. So if the sleeping pallet and pillow were from a former occupant, perhaps a child who'd made a play space a long time ago. Were the noises somehow also connected to this long-ago resident? I'd likely never be certain what was causing the strange noises from the walls and ceiling of the bedroom or who or what occupied that crawl space, but I can't help but think there was some connection between the two. Hope you enjoyed my story. Love to hear any of your thoughts. Take care.
I hope that it was just a play space, but my mind doesn't go there.
Play space for the dead.
No, I mean, I don't know. I just think it. I don't know.
Jenny doesn't know what she's talking about.
I don't. For some reason, I get a vibe that it's not a good thing. Not that the noises are a bad thing.
Isn't a human is up there? That shouldn't be.
No, more so is that was like where a child was kept or something like that.
Oh,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
In a crawl space with a pillow and a mat. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe he was onto something with his initial joke, where he threw it out there, going, "I don't want to see some, you know, ghost boy come out and talk about how he was murdered." I mean, maybe there's some reason behind that joke. Not that he had any, you know, cognizant knowledge of anything, but just maybe there was something that's why that is the joke that came out, and it wasn't whatever else you could possibly come up with for who might be living in a weird little space.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like a hiding place.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you have to hide, that's not a good thing outside of playing hide and seek.
Mm-hmm. If I was a kid and that was my house, I would have so much fun up there. There'd be so many cool little things you could do and be like your own little house.
Mm-hmm.
If it was used for that, that's the question. Thank you for sharing that story with us. Kylie writes in, I'm sorry. Hi guys, my name is Kylie, live in San Diego. I've found a gold mine with listening to your podcast. This is my paranormal outlet, so listening to your podcast is a real treat for me. Tombstone is one of my favorite movies. The whole story of Wyatt Earp and his boys has always intrigued me. A few years ago, my husband and I decided to take a road trip vacation to Tombstone, Arizona to see this historical town for ourselves. We stayed at a very modest motel off the main street, nothing fancy. We quickly fell in love with the town and later with our motel. A few quick notes that pertain to the story. Number one, when my husband and I stay in hotels, we always put the do not disturb sign on the doorknob for the entire time we occupy the room. Not that I have anything against hotel staff touching our stuff. I just have never liked the idea of someone else picking up after me. Number two, sorry to my husband, as my husband grew up with sisters and constantly got yelled at for leaving the toilet seat up. He eventually gave into that war and has peed sitting down since he was about 12 years old. Three, my husband is a terrible liar. He looks away at his lips curl, up hiding a smile when he's lying. After a great first day wandering around Tombstone, Arizona, that ended in a ghost hunting tour in the Birdcage Theater, we decided to call it a night. We got back to the hotel. We did our nightly ritual, brushing our teeth, washing our face, etc. We snuggled in, turned on the TV, and eventually drifted off. At about 3 a.m. in the sleepy stupor, I made my way to the bathroom only to have my ass meet water. The toilet seat was up. I screamed at the sudden fall into the toilet. My husband woke up and said, "What happened? You left the toilet seat up." I responded frustratingly, to which he responded, left the toilet seat up. Since when have I ever done that? The realization set in, and he did, in fact, have a great point. We've been married 4 years at the time, and he has never done that. I quickly put two and two together and realized that the toilet seat was down before we went to bed. A chill came over me. Not because of the cold water I was sitting in. The hairs of my arm stood up. My mind directly went to paranormal. The next day, I asked my husband throughout the day, "Are you sure you didn't do it? What if you didn't remember? You're playing a joke on me. Just tell me. You got the reaction. What more do you want?" Each of his responses were quite serious. Eye contact and no smiles. He's very adamant. It was not him. We stayed there 3 nights total, and the seat was up in the middle of the night every night after. I checked it before each time so I wouldn't repeat the first night. And each time I muttered some comment. "Nice try," or "It's getting old now. Think of something better." Unfortunately, nothing else substantial happened in the room other than a few noises and things fell off the counter in the bathroom, but those could be easily written off. But I do know whoever that spirit was had a good laugh that night. When we checked out, I mentioned it to the nice lady at the front desk, and she smiled and shook her head. She said the ghosts that reside in this little motel have a knack for playing tricks on the guests. Next time we go, I'll be staying at that motel again. Not sure if this will make it on your show, but thank you very much for taking your time to read it. I do have another story about our experience at the Birdcage Theater, which I can share if you'd like. Thank you for all that you guys do. Keep up the good work. I plan to become an EPP member shortly.
I think it's funny that a ghost would choose of all things to do that.
Just screwing with people.
Yeah.
I like that.
I do too.
I wonder if, like, is that all the, if you're able to manipulate an object, you get like one object a day, is that like what you go for?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, this will make the biggest impact.
Yeah.
This will screw with them the most. That's a good story. And yes, we would like to hear more of those stories. So please do share. It's always funny when you get the stories. And at the beginning, there's all these, it's kind of like the key to the story where it's like, number one, and then they don't really make a whole lot of sense at that moment in time. Like my husband, when he lies, he does this and he never leaves the toilet seat down.
Or leaves it up.
It's like, okay, well, that's
good to know.
I'm glad the story doesn't end there. And then it's like, I love your show. Bye.
I wonder if the ghost was tickled by that, by the fact that he didn't bother to stand or to lift the seat. Maybe that's why the ghost is doing that.
It's probably not a common thing that he gets to screw with people on, because it's probably quite often the humans that are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably rare to have the knowledge that that's something, oh, this will work great. Good for the ghost. Thanks for the story. 855-853-4802. Our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to call your story in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And of course, EPP, you heard that mentioned at the end of that story. That's our extra podcast person program. So to get a ghostpodcast.com, you can download those. You get access. There's like 125, 126 of them at this point. And they're full episodes, our best stories. They are there and they are only there. $5 a month is all it costs to access those. And you get access to all of them, plus exclusive video content and all the episodes that have fallen off of iTunes as well. All there for you to binge away on at your leisure at ghostpodcast.com. That's what supports the show and keeps it on the air. So if you like it, please become an EPP. There at ghostpodcast.com. Rachel writes in, "Hey, Tony and Jenny." Rachel from Dallas, Oregon again. "I just wanted to say thank you so much for reading my stories on your show and for featuring two of my stories on two of your recent EPP episodes. I'm very grateful. My last story was on EPP 123. I mentioned that my older sister, a psychic medium, had been chased by a demon in the house we grew up in. I'll now continue with the telling of what happened. I was about 13 at the time, and I'd been awoken by my mom during the night. And she told me to get up and get out of bed, but I was tired and didn't want to get up. I quickly argued why. I could hear the hesitation in her voice as if she was trying to come up with a good reason other than the truth, because someone might be looking in your window at you. 'Please just get up and come to the living room,' she said pleadingly. I did as I was told. When I got to the living room, I was surprised to see the lights on, my whole family sitting on the sectional couch looking either terrified or confused. I settled on the couch next to my twin brother, and I knew something was up. Something bad had just happened, and my parents, my older sister, and my foster sister seemed to be the only ones who knew about it. I watched as my parents left the living room to search the house, and I was so bewildered but figured that perhaps someone had tried to break into our house or something. They shortly returned to the living room. I remember just wanting to go back to bed, and the conversation in the room turned to my sisters not wanting to go back to their room that they shared. My parents agreed to making them a bed on their bedroom floor, but they then had us all join in a family prayer. My parents asked for protection from anything evil, which seemed weird to me, but I was too tired to care much, and I went back to bed as soon as the prayer was over. I only learned what had happened that night after my sister had moved out and had come back home for a visit about a year after. So I'll tell you what she told me. My sister's names will be changed for their privacy. My sister Marie and my foster sister Nicole were best friends, happily shared a room. Marie said having Nicole in her room with her made it much more comfortable. She wasn't so afraid of the shadow man that stood by her closet if Nicole was with her. So they were lying in bed, sleeping. The room was the first room in the hallway of bedrooms. My parents' room was at the other end, three doors down. It was late at night, possibly in the early hours of the morning, when Marie and Nicole heard a loud thud on their window. It was then followed by loud screeching, as if someone were scratching her glass window with something sharp. It went on for a moment, and Marie, having the ability she has, knew she should be afraid. She and Nicole quickly jumped out of bed, but wanting to get out of her room immediately, Marie could feel something inside the room with them and knew they needed to get out. As she turned her doorknob, it refused to open. The door had no lock, it just refused to open. They both began to scream, and they tried with all their might to open the door. Marie, adrenaline flowing, ended up breaking the door right out of its jam, and they proceeded to run down the hall to my parents' room, screaming in terror. They flung open my parents' door, jumped on their bed, and just as they did, both my parents shot up from their sleep and started yelling, "We rebuke you in Jesus' name." My parents told them that they were sleeping. They both could not only hear my sister's screams, but they could also see them in their dream, running down the hallway towards their room. My sisters weren't alone in the hallway, though. On the ceiling above my sisters was a large black-winged creature chasing them. And that was the reason for the family prayer meeting that night. My mom had the pastor over the very next day to bless the house. I know it didn't rid the house of evil entities, but it did seem to make the house's energy lighter and more positive for a while, as usual. My family encountered a few more things while living in this house. We all moved out a few years after this event, though. It seems my siblings and I were the only ones who were affected by what lurked in this house. My parents didn't see any of it. So, thanks as always for the awesome show. I recently became an EPP, which was long overdue, and I'm enjoying the stories very much. I have a few more stories to tell, too. You guys are great. Keep up the good work. Peace and God bless you and your family.
I don't know why it seems like that thing only seemed to pick on the sisters. You know, of all the people in the house, it only picked on them.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was something that only they would pick up on.
Maybe.
And it knew that maybe they have the sensitivity or the whatever ability to see and sense this thing more than others would. I don't know. Maybe it knew that they would have no understanding or control of being able to get out of the house or change the setting, if you will. Or if the parents are being affected by this directly on a regular basis, I think there's probably a little more incentive there, at least in their minds, to we must change this now. Because it's happening to you. Not that you wouldn't care about your kids and want to, you know. But as, you know, there'd be also an element of it going, well, it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be okay. It'll calm down. They'll get over it. Until the shit starts hitting the fan for yourself. And you're the one that can make the call and is in control of the setting in which you live.
Right.
At least to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it knew that, you know, trolling these kids, they can't move. Mm-hmm. They're trapped here no matter what. I could see that being part of it as well. I think that's sometimes why you have these things that tend to go after kids more so than the parents on a regular basis. So that's my thoughts on it. Thank you for sharing the story. We do appreciate that. 855-853-4802 is our number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your stories and experiences with us. We would greatly appreciate that. And of course, like I've been saying, ghostpodcast.com. So you can hear all those EPP episodes, just the best stories we got. I will say this, EPP 124, which was recorded not long ago, the very last story on that, I've determined it's in my top three.
Yeah.
As far as one of the best stories that we've ever gotten in on the show that Jesus wrote in. It was just so creepy and disturbing and disgusting at the same time. There was elements of everything in there.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of everything for the whole family, but the whole family should probably not listen to that story.
Definitely.
It was good. It was very good. So if you've not checked that out, that's an EPP 124. But there are so many, you know, there's literally thousands of stories in our EPP episodes now. So you can pick the one you like best, but they're all pretty damn good. John writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. My wife and I are not sensitive or look for the paranormal, but we seem to find it anyways. This is the most intense experience we've had so far. To be closer to work, Sarah, my wife, our son, and I moved into an apartment south of Chicago. It was the second floor and had two bedrooms, and the price was perfect for a new family. We lived there for about 6 months when we started to notice weird things happening. We find items like keys, pens, and other small things in unusual places. They'd go missing and we'd find them in places that didn't make sense, like under the bed, in the closet, or even on top of the stove. This is not the first time we had experienced this kind of activity, so Sarah and I decided it was harmless and we would just ignore it. A couple of weeks after the activity started, Sarah would notice weird shadows in her bedroom late at night. Shadows were never in the same place and they'd never formed any shape that she could recognize. Shadows would appear once or twice a week, but never stayed long. A few weeks before, I'd see the shadows. They'd seem to linger near the closet or the far side of the room. Although the shadows were creepy, they didn't do anything, so we decided to leave them alone. One night, my curiosity won out, and I gathered my courage and tried to approach one of the shadows, hoping I could determine what was causing it. As soon as I got out of bed, the shadow moved towards the closet and vanished inside. Anytime we'd try to approach any of the shadows, they'd move into the closet and disappear. 3 months after the shadows started, the activity started to escalate. One night, the sound of a door slamming woke me from my sleep. Afraid it was an intruder, I woke my wife and told her I heard someone. We got up and I searched around the apartment while Sarah checked on our son. The doors and windows were all locked, and after I confirmed that no one was in our apartment, I headed back to our room and told Sarah that I didn't find anything. The help ease my fears. I double-checked all the doors and windows. As soon as the adrenaline subsided, I went back to sleep. This happened two more times. After the second time hearing the door slam sound, we started to lock the doors with the chains. Third time we woke to the sound, I found the chains were still in place and no one was in the apartment. We never found the source of the sound. Several months after the slamming sound started, we had the experience that changed our minds about this apartment. After finishing some work for the office, I decided it was time for bed. Walked into my room, and I saw a human-sized shadow standing on the side of the bed where Sarah was sleeping. My first thought was that someone was peeping in the window, but I realized the window was on the same wall that the shadow was standing. Not knowing what it was, I froze with fear, unable to even think. The shadow started to move, peeling off the wall like a sticker. I shifted up to hover over my wife with as much voice as I could muster. I called out to Sarah. She turned over and asked me what I wanted. All I could do was point at the shadow. She turned to where I was pointing and gasped. Turned pale with fear, and Sarah whispered, "Do something." Angry at it scaring Sarah, I snapped out of my paralysis and started yelling, "I don't know what you are or who you are, but go away. Leave us alone and don't show yourself ever again. If you do anything else, I'll bring in someone to remove you from our house." The shadow moved away, passing through the closet door. Since then, everything stopped and we didn't see or hear anything else in that apartment. Sarah and I decided that we would break our lease and move out of the apartment as soon as possible.
I think there's as much reason for adults to be afraid of the closet as children.
Are you afraid of the closet?
I haven't been, but it makes you wonder. I haven't seen anything go in and out of our closet either, though.
I think it's different. It depends on the size of your closet.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember like being a little creeped out by the closet when it's just like the closet doors, you know, the accordion or whatever that just open.
Like the two sets, right?
The
there?
Two sides, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That to me is like the closet of childhood, for the most part, where it's, you know, that opens like that. And then I had some apartments that had that. Then I had my first apartment, but one of my apartments had an actual, you know, walk-in.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't freak me out. And I think I've had walk-ins ever since then. My recollection is correct. And it doesn't feel like a closet anymore. It feels like a room. It's a tiny room.
Yeah.
At that point. So I don't know if that like if there's some dynamic to it being such a small confined space when it's a closet like that, as compared to the it's a tiny room.
I don't know, but I can see your point. I think maybe it's because it's the closets of our childhood that kind of, like you said, maybe kind of freak us out.
Yeah, I've had like no weird fear of that.
Yeah.
Now what if being afraid of what's under the bed? Are you afraid of what's under the bed when you're on a bunk bed and you're on the top bunk?
Depends on who's on the bottom bunk.
Well, what if there's just nobody? What if it's just like normally nothing? Nobody's down there. Does it still incite fear then? Because it's not like the deep dark space that you can't really get in. I don't know.
I don't know.
I never had a bunk bed, so I can't answer that. Nikki writes in, I've been binge listening to EPP episodes while at work lately. Sent in a short experience from when I was a kid and had bunk beds. That terrified me earlier this week. Listening to episodes just made me really remember other weird stuff that happened to me in the past. I remember being interested in the paranormal as long as I can remember. Checked out books on ghosts in elementary school since I was old enough to read. When I was in high school, I got very much into Wicca. A lot of my friends and their parents are part of the Wiccan coven in the area, and my friend's mom was a high priestess. As a group one day, we decided to go ghost hunting. We'd done it once before at a local cemetery, but since our town was very new, established in the 40s, there aren't very many graves, old graves. And the old, only weird experience we had was a friend saying, oh, I remember him, and then realizing that the person died before he was born. So this instance, we had all decided to go ghost hunting, and I'm not sure who decided to go in this area, in the wooded area, but we ended up in the woods. Remember the start of the night, parking our cars, and ridden in two separate cars, and gathering our stuff, flashlights, spotlights, etc., some tape recorders. And I remember walking next to a friend talking about comic books when we had been reading as we walked into the brush. This is the last thing I remember. My next memory is being in the back of my friend's car and someone flashing a light in my face saying, she looks really pale. After that, the next thing I remember is being in my friend's house, freezing cold and wrapped in blankets. My friends told me that they had rushed to me and rushed me to his house because his mom was a high priestess and they had consecrated items in there. They wouldn't tell me exactly what happened that made them want to rush me to his house, but they were very worried and they were hovering over me and wouldn't let me go home until they were sure I was back to normal. I remember once I did get home and went to bed, I had such horrible nightmares about flashing red lights and red orbs or red eyes that I didn't want to go back to sleep. This experience happened when I was 15, so it's over 10 years ago, but it still sticks with me. Not because I have such a clear memory of what happened, but because I have such a strange, specific cutout of what I don't remember. It's like someone took an old VHS tape and cut out a few sections, then taped the ends together to leave a weird blank. Very clear memories of before, even to the point of, remember, commenting on the pretty buttons on my friend's jacket, and very clear memories of what happened after. I remember the blanket I was wrapped in was plaid and shapes of brown and tan. But what happened in between, I don't have vague memories. Anyway, that's my story. None of my friends ever talked about that night. And I moved away and lost contact with him not long afterwards. It scares me to this day. I hope to hear this on the podcast, and mostly thanks for reading, Nikki.
I think that might be one of the scariest ghost hunting investigations you could have, is where something happens so traumatic your brain either blocks it out or something takes over you and you have no memory.
Why didn't the friends tell what happened?
I don't know. Maybe they were afraid.
I would think at some point you'd have to go back. I mean, maybe not at that exact moment. Hey, remember what just happened to you? And you're, still in shock. Probably not the best time to do it, but I would think at some point you're like, okay, different day, different time, different setting. What happened? I'd have to know.
Yeah.
I don't think I could go on being like, that was pretty shitty. I'm glad I don't remember any of it. I'd at least like some direction or something, just something to know what happened. That sounds horrible. Do you know? Did they ever tell you? Did you ask?
It sounds like she still doesn't know.
I'd be looking up some friends on Facebook that you used to know back there and trying to put some of those pieces together. You know, the fact that it was so long ago, but it still troubles you to this day, it's probably a good idea to find out. It's probably a good idea to get that, just to get, if you can work through it. Because it will probably still be a troubling memory until something can be worked through there.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, ignorance is bliss.
To a certain extent, if it doesn't bother you, sure.
Yeah.
But if it's still troubling, there's something that I think probably needs to be worked through there. But that does not sound like a fun time.
No.
So there you go. Ghost hunters, beware. Essentially. That's a lot of, it's funny because we get a lot of people on that write like, I really would love to go ghost hunting sometime. Listen to our show for a little while.
Yeah.
And then tell me if you still want to go ghost hunting. And you may want to, but there's lots of experiences that anything can happen. So thanks for sharing. Chase writes in, hey guys, this is Chase from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Go Tigers, beat Ohio State. I'm the guy who risked being yelled at by a Long Islander for photographing the infamous Amityville house and submitted my pictures to you guys a little while back. Anyway, my story of the unexplained happened to me approximately 12 years ago. My family and I hosted a world-famous and painstaking family reunion that I was forced to participate in. Our local church down the dirt road we lived on had given us permission to access their ice maker, tables, chairs, etc. At the end of the cloudy and dreary day, it came time for my younger brother and I to return a few final items to the church that we had missed in our previous trip to the return stuff. We found this to be no big deal because we were thrilled to depart from the elderly annoyances of our home. We knew where the church kept the spare key and easy access from the outside. My brother was not a big fan of being inside of a church when no one else was there, and after what happened to me, I don't blame him. I slowly opened the creaky old wooden side door located near the nursery. Across the hall from said nursery, there was a doorway leading to one of two long hallways that led to an empty and dark sanctuary. I was beckoned by my inner stupidity and dark curiosity to walk the long dark hallway and step foot inside the empty sanctuary. There was nothing more eerie that I have ever experienced in my entire life. I'll never forget feeling each individual hair on the back of my neck stand at full attention while I gazed among the dimly lit sanctuary, and my eyes bounced from empty pew to empty pew. The pale sunlight was hitting the beautiful stained glass windows most creepily. I had had enough of my silence alone in the room and expected to see something inside of the darkened baptismal pool on the way out, but fortunately enough, I did not see anything out of the ordinary. I closed the old wooden door with a creak and walked very quickly back down the dark hallway leading to my exit. As I turned to make sure the door behind me had closed with a click, I glanced to my left down a hallway across from the kitchen to see another side door, identical to the one that I had entered at the beginning of my story, leading to the outside, flung wide open, and it had suddenly begun to rain heavily. I walked quietly but rather quickly over to it to see if another car had pulled up on the other side of the churchyard and expected to see a familiar face and feel a small amount of relief that you feel watching cartoons after a horror movie. To my dismay and to my terror, there was no one or nothing inside, outside, or inside with me. I slammed the door shut, locked it, and bolted down the hallway to my exit door in speed that would have certainly had me reprimanded for running that way in a church. I locked the exit door and put the key back into the respective hiding spot and almost scaled the wheelchair ramp underneath the carport to get back into my car where my brother had been waiting for me. He's pretty freaked out at my story, and I told him as we went 55 miles an hour down a posted 20-mile-an-hour dirt road back home. Every now and then I dream of this church. It's always dark, cloudy day, and I'm forced to pass it on a walk home where my house is 3 miles away from it. Thanks, guys, for taking the time to read this. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope all my paranormal brothers and sisters did as well. Much love, Chase from Myrtle Beach.
What do you think it is that haunts churches?
Oh, I think it can be a whole litany of things, from dark things to probably a lot of, honestly, good things.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking a lot of church ladies and...
Yeah.
And people that have had a lot of happy times there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking back to my grandparents and how often, I mean, they would, my grandfather volunteered at the church all the time to do woodworking and all sorts of just, you know, help around the church stuff. And then and my grandma, you know, she did, you know, friends there in this group and that group. And so there was a lot of happy times there. And they were older, as a lot of the folks in those groups tend to be. More likely to probably pass sooner than others. So I suppose, you know, if you're passing and you're just kind of like, I don't know what, I'm still here. What am I going to do? You'd probably try and go back to places you'd been happy at.
Sure.
Or recently, maybe someone would find you or recognize you or see you, and that would probably be at the church. So I could see there being a lot of that.
So the creepiness is just in the sense that something is there, but not necessarily what it is.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's the sense of there's something here, but I don't know who or what, mm-hmm. unless you have the ability to really pick up on that, which most of us do not. Most of us don't pick up on anything, or just that slight little tinge of, I feel like there's other people here, but I can't tell where or why or what is going on. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of it. And it is creepy. Have you ever been in like a church sanctuary when it's not an active church service and it's not like before a service or after a service? It's just like middle of the week and nothing is going on and all the lights are out?
Several times.
Yeah.
Yes.
That there's an eeriness to it.
Yeah.
Especially when you're like the only one there. Mm-hmm. I used to do that. I remember my mom, when I was a kid, she, for a little while, would be on like the church cleaning crew, mm-hmm. a little volunteer group, and then go around and clean the church. And I mean, to this day, it's funny because we still go and visit when we're up in Wisconsin, go visit the church with them. And then some of the ladies who were on the cleaning crew, and I don't mean to sound horrible or anything, but they seemed super old to me back then when I was like four. And some of them are like, I'm shocked sometimes because I'm like, oh my God, they're still alive. It's like, that was like 30 years ago, you know? And I'm like trying to do the math. I'm like, she's like 120 now, or like, what the hell is going on here? But I think it's more so just in your mind, anybody over the age of like 50 when you're a kid seems really old.
Yeah.
So that's probably what it was. These are probably ladies that were in their 40s mm-hmm. or 50s back then. And in my mind, they're like, oh, they're 90, you know, when you're four. That's what your mind's registering. But it's funny because they'll still, if I'm with my mom, oh, is this little Tony? I remember giving him Lifesavers. And then there was this one old lady who just gave me at least Lifesavers. It was great times. Anyway, when they would be cleaning, I was told, okay, you know, you can play in like the little nursery area. And I was supposed to stay there.
And you never did.
No, of course not. I wanted to explore and see what was going on. Because it was like kind of a maze of a building. And one time I got lost, ended up in the preschool. And my mom was searching. We eventually went to the preschool to try and find, because she searched everywhere else. Mm-hmm. The preschool took me in. I'm like, oh, somebody will figure out who's this kid this is. And eventually my mom found me. I was three at that round. And I went to the preschool like the following year. Mm-hmm. So it was like my first like kind of like preview day, if you will, of the preschool. The other times I remember just wandering around the halls of the church. And I went going up to the church and going in to the actual sanctuary. And it's a big, you know, A-frame church. And empty. No one was cleaning that part at the moment. And I was thinking maybe I'd run into somebody, but it was empty. I'm just walking down the aisle towards like the altar and just looking around at all like the giant lights and empty pews. And it's all very dark in there, just stained glass that kind of, you know, didn't really pick up a whole lot of light. Mm-hmm. It was just creepy as hell. But it's weird because that's a room that otherwise is not creepy at all. It's like one of the most warm, inviting spaces I can think of from childhood, of just like, especially Christmas time, the Christmas tree and all the people happy and this and that. But that's a place that can go from the warmest and most, you know, friendly feeling on earth to, where am I? Like this, I shouldn't be here longer than like two more minutes.
Yeah.
It's amazing how that can change.
Maybe it's just that difference of going from a place so full of life and energy mm-hmm. to completely empty. Kind of like your fascination with abandoned places.
It's probably like that. It's like an abandoned mall. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like religiously comparing it to that. I'm just like aesthetically comparing it to that, where a place that's so exciting and full of life and happy to, oh my God, mm-hmm. it looks like an abandoned wasteland. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, abandoned churches feel that way too. If you look at some of the images that people have taken and posted online, it's like the not just the clothes or the church that's not in use at that moment, but the church that's never going to be in use again. Mm-hmm. That's even creepier. So, yeah, good times. There you go. Anna writes in, "Dear Jenny and Tony, I heard on today's episode that you asked about stories of ghosts passing through walls as doors were there before. I have some stories to tell. When I lived in Miami Beach after I graduated from college, I moved to this Art Deco historic town by the beach. The building I lived in was built around the 1920s and had many renovations. I remember that at night when I used to get up to go to the bathroom, I used to see shadow people, more like dark figures of people, passing in front of me through the walls of the hallway that led to the bathroom. They never seemed to notice me. They looked like old people and they passed through solid walls. Maybe in the past there used to be doors to the rooms there. Since these buildings constantly over the decades had renovations to convert them eventually to apartments, another experience that I had happened to me when I spent summers in central Italy. At night when I used to walk in the alleyways to meet my friends at the local pizzeria, I used to see people dressed in hooded outfits.
Piazza. Which is the plaza.
Plaza. Oh, look at that. But in my defense, it's one letter off from pizza.
Okay.
P-I-A-Z-Z-A. P-I-Z-Z-A is pizza.
Mm-hmm. So I thought... It just makes a difference for the story.
Local pizzeria.
Uh-huh.
We're Americanizing it.
Yeah, we are.
It's like the show where you
like
take it...
Like all of Italy's a Pizza Hut.
We had cheesy breadsticks and... Okay. Piazza. Okay. I always used to see people dressed in outfits at the local Pizza Hut. Kind of like those people used to dress in the Middle Ages. They'll just stand there and stare at me and just go into the wall. I'll run and see where they disappear into, and to my amazement, I'll find myself touching a solid wall. And this is where it will get interesting. The wall at one point you could see at that arch used to be there and at one point in time, but now at present time it's covered in brick. The same apparition, as well as others, will do the same. I counted at least four individuals, all males. I never saw their faces since their hood shadowed their faces. The funny thing about it, I never was scared. I got used to nightly walks and my nightly companions. I guess they were trying to tell me something or show me a place. But then again, under this town, I can't pronounce the names of the towns. There was a Roman city under the town where you can go. Okay, we can go under and walk the streets and avenues. So who knows what else roamed under the town. I write on another occasion regarding my haunted summers in the city. From something knocking in my window to the middle of the night, where my window was high enough where no living being could climb up and do this, experiencing odors and actually ghostly voices talking to me. As always, you guys are the best outlet for the paranormal and the paranormally disturbed. Love you, Anna.
So that goes along with what we've thought about the whole remodel and moving a door and ghosts are just not clued into this change.
They're still operating on what they had.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a Pizza Hut there.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure there was, because that's where you want to eat when you're in Italy.
I'm still confused as how Pizza Hut ties into the story. Is there a Pizza Hut in the story?
There's not.
I'm kidding. I'm just playing stupid. I know. That's true. That's like something. I have some family members who would do that. Very much. It's like, let's go. You know, I'm always about, and I find it just to be a foreign concept, of you're in a different place. Let's go, and you just want to go to the staple place that you always go to at home. I love to go and try the different, like the local places.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're in a place like Italy and you go to Pizza Hut. Do they have Pizza Huts in Italy?
I hope not. That's just wrong.
Maybe they're like really good. Maybe it's like one of those things together. You won't believe it. You're not going to believe this. Trust me on this. The Pizza Hut is better. You know.
Well, it's like, do they really send the chefs at Olive Garden to Italy? I mean,
like in the commercials.
Seriously.
I think. There is some level of that which is done, but I think it's, and this is, I could be completely wrong, and if you work for the Olive Garden, you can correct this and tell us the full story. This is just my guess on it, but I'm guessing probably more like on a corporate level, like the corporate chefs that come up with the recipes and stuff, which I find not a ton of them compared to the bajillion restaurants. There's probably like 10 corporate chefs. I'm guessing those are the ones that probably go to Italy.
Yeah.
And then, okay, we're going to come up with a... I don't think it's like the one that's working down next to the Best Buy.
Like the commercial would have you believe.
Exactly.
Like if you work at Olive Garden and you're a chef, you get to go to Italy.
Yeah. Chuck down at the Olive Garden with the Best Buy probably is not going on the yearly Italy trip to come up with new inspired menu items.
No.
For the Pomona Olive Garden. That's probably not how that works. But it would be pretty neat if it was. That would be quite a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. I think people think that they actually...
I don't know.
Do you think the marketing works?
You know, there's probably people that believe it. I thought that's kind of funny how they make it seem that way, but I knew it was bullshit. Like, there's no way they're going to send, you know, 10,000...
Jenny gets really angry when she watches
head
commercials.
I do. I hate commercials. Like, and the sad thing
fucking
is...
Fucking Red Lobster, that's bullshit. They're not out in Maine getting lobsters out of the sea. She's, like, throwing, like, fake crab sticks at the TV and just cursing up a storm. Got to cover the children's ears.
I hate commercials, even though that's what you do is commercials. I'm sorry, but I do hate them.
She's just got a vengeance for the Olive Garden chain.
I think it's time for Snake Story.
Janine writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. Happy New Year. Is it Janine? Janine from Louisiana. We've recently experienced one of the strangest paranormal events in my life. This is from a person who experiences paranormal activity almost daily. I wrote about my experiences previously. Thank you again for providing this forum. You and Jenny offered poignant comments about my ability to be a gatekeeper or to help souls pass over. I finally came to a somewhat peace that I will never sleep a full night. I am awakened every night between the hours of 1 to 3 a.m. My faces, voices, and touches. The other night, an entire group of people passed through my room in uniform, and I woke to be shocked and saddened to read about the Russian plane crash with a Red Army choir. I'm hopeful those souls have moved on to a better place. I also wish to provide comfort to your listeners who are also sensitive individuals and feel burdened or afraid of their gift. It is difficult for this is, but this is a reason. Believe that you will be able to handle it, but it does not have to isolate you from your normal daily life. Lately during the night, I've been seeing things in between. These are dense, dark humanoid forms that when I look at them in my mind's eye, they run off. I've also been experiencing more frequent touches, an ice cold, almost like a feather brushing on my right arm or foot, which awakens me about every night. As I sit up, I feel a sense of quickening, lie back down, try to control my breath and heart rate to calm myself, and eventually fall back to sleep. I try to hide my arms and feet under cover, hoping that they will, that will help to avoid the icy touches. A few months ago, my husband and I stayed at a Landmark hotel in the New Orleans French Quarter while in town for a concert. We're not staying on the floor that had the purported paranormal activity. Every hotel in New Orleans has purported paranormal activity. However, throughout the night, I kept getting touched on my face and hair with a sense of being pawed on my shoulders. I sat up, disturbing my husband as usual. Rule of thumb, I never ask who it is or what it wants. I try not to make a big deal. I just lie back down, roll over, and try to go back to sleep. However, when I did awake that morning, I felt a sting on back, went to the mirror, saw scratches on my back. My husband took pictures. There were four very distinct scratch lines down my back, like claw marks. That was the first time I had physical evidence to that degree. My husband said it was like someone or something was saying, "Hey, pay attention to me." He compared it to our five dogs and three cats, all who are rescued animals, and who each have a very traumatic story before they came to our house. They want a lot of attention, which they get, and therefore they are spoiled. Each night we crate four of the dogs. A fifth one, our oldest girl, sleeps in the bed with us. The three cats also sleep with us, and one positions himself on the pillow between us. His name is Siddhartha, and he places a paw on my face or shoulder while he purrs loudly. Sometimes he'll dig under the covers to be a little spoon. I've woken with his paw shoved in my open mouth. The reason I bring this up is because I am surrounded by a lot of protective, loving animal energy. This makes all that I've experienced in my bedroom somewhat puzzling because it doesn't follow the typical animal response to hauntings or activity. The event I'm sharing is one of the strangest in that I awoke to a very heavy, cold, and dense sensation in my right arm. As I became aware of it and began to wake up, I saw and felt a very thick and muscular snake-like body. I felt the cold, coiled energy and scales against my arm, and it weighed my limb down to the bed. For what seemed like minutes, my arm was pressed into the bed by this cold, dense, coiled heaviness. For those who have never held or touched a large snake, that feeling probably doesn't make sense, and I'm sorry if I'm grossing anyone out. But it's very distinct in feeling. Snakes, as a rule, don't bother me. Did your headphones fall off there? Suddenly Jenny just drank a big swig of Diet Cola and then grabbed her headphones in a very dramatic fashion.
Sorry. Proceed.
What was it?
I did exactly what you said.
Okay.
It started to slide off my head.
That was dramatic. Snakes, as a rule, don't bother me. I interned as a reptile docent at the Baton Rouge Zoo. And my dad was a zoology teacher at a high school. And we had a boa constrictor as a pet while growing up. But this felt bigger than a boa constrictor, more like a python or anaconda. It was that heavy, and it moved up and down my arm. And it was icy cold. I actually felt violated and sat up with a sense of what the hell just happened. And all my animals were sleeping. Siddhartha had his paw on my cheek until I sat up. I couldn't sleep the rest of the night, but did take comfort that my pets were sleeping well. Just last night, I was awoken by what was becoming the norm of the quickening sensation and an icy cold feeling of fingers brushing on my right arm. But now to the sense of fingers reaching under my blanket, under my back, and trying to lift my body up and out of the bed. Do I continue to ignore what is really hard, or what is trying really hard to get my attention? My animals don't seem stressed about it or anything about what's going on in the room, except I believe the one cat is claiming ownership. Have any of your listeners experienced anything similar? Thank you so much. I would have never dreamt of sharing this before I found your podcast. Best, Janine.
It almost sounds like a partial sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, except she was able to move pretty quick, but it's like while she's laying there, this snake-like feeling's going across her.
I can only wonder if this is just a sleep paralysis, considering the animals are not being affected by this at all.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't seem to be a whole lot in waking hours that's correlating to this. There's not, like, from what I can tell, anything else going on around the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this and done. So I'm wondering if this is just a true example of just sleep paralysis, a very creepy version of it. I think there's different variations on sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. I think this might be just one of those. There's always some sort of sensation, and I think people kind of get it in different places, and I wonder if this is that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm leaning towards.
So thank you, Janine, for the story and sharing the experience with us. You might be lucky. That's probably the best case scenario. I hope she's not disappointed, not going, damn, I wish I had a ghost. I don't know that you do.
Yeah.
I think this might literally be sleep paralysis and completely psychological. So thank you for the story. If there's other things to add to it that we're unaware of, do share. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. That wraps up today's episode of the show. Thanks for tuning in. We greatly appreciate that. If you like our show, keep us on the air. Become an EPP. Extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com to do that. Get all the bonus episodes of the show. Sign up for a month, only $5 a month. Or you can do the full year and get every single episode. Get a month of it free and a bunk bed bell. Check it out at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.